here again with us. Tonight we're going to talk about a question that I got from a young man in our community who's learning in Eretz Yisrael. And he said he had a whole list of questions that he mentioned. Some of them were about Shemitah and some of them were about Hashgachos. I did mention to him, if you're worried about Shemitah and Hashgachos, where have you been since Rosh Hashanah? It's been active in Eretz Yisrael ever since you got there, which was, Hashgacha was already an issue before you got to Israel. So did you think about this? What was the plan? Anyway, that was part of his question. But then he asked an interesting question about something that he said just dawned upon him. I was not aware that the buses that usually go to the Old City no longer go into the Old City. Is that correct? You were just there. Did you notice? That's what I was recently told. You don't take buses? You don't think they do? They used to go up to Shaar HaShbot, right next to the Kotel. Apparently now they don't anymore because since they used to go through East Jerusalem and now it's pretty dangerous, so they leave everybody off by Mamila Mall. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I was told. This young man corroborated that, and he said as a result, he just can't bring himself to walk, so he takes taxis. Okay, so he said that he's been wondering, on Matzah Shabbos, he flags down a taxi, and he said this taxi driver is a Chiloni, and he didn't make Abdallah, so how am I allowed to ask him to be doing Malacha for me? So that's a very interesting question, and I want to use it as an opportunity not only to speak about his question in particular, but just to think in general. I think we live in a society, especially in Eretz Yisrael, where we have a lot of chilonim who are interacting on a daily basis, Baruch Hashem, that should be. They're interacting very positively with the dati community, with the religious community, and the question then becomes, how do we deal with some of those uncomfortable situations? How do we deal with some of the times when we are faced with a scenario where we're not exactly sure how to handle it? I will add that there is somebody in our shir this evening who asked a very similar question, not exactly the same, but also something to throw into the mix here, and that is, when you have a team of people who work together, and everybody has to take a certain shift, and not only does it happen in the medical profession, which this happens all the time, but do I have a right to switch my shift, which is supposed to be on Shabbos, with another Jew in my practice who is not a Shomer Shabbos and does not care to work on Shabbos at all? If I switch with them, they'll have no problem switching with me. But the question is, do I have a right to do that, when by doing so, I know that I'm going to be making them work on Shabbos? That is just a small issue, but it's part of a much larger question. How do we deal with uncomfortable scenarios that come up when we're dealing with people who are obviously Jewish, but are not necessarily sensitive to all the mitzvos, to all the different isurim, to all the different way of life that we might be careful and thoughtful and mindful about? Is that something that is our responsibility? Is that our obligation? Or perhaps you say, let somebody be the way they are, and it's not my problem. I don't have to change anything about my decision-making process because of the way that they choose to live their lives. So the way to begin with this is with the words of the Rambam. When the Rambam introduces us in the 29th parak of Hilchos Shabbos, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam introduces us to the mitzvah of Kiddush. And the Rambam says, Mitzvah Saseh min HaTorah, Lekadesh es Yom HaShabbos Bidvarim. We have a Mitzvah Saseh, a biblical commandment, a Mitzvah Saseh Midyaraisa, to say Kiddush on Shabbos. Shanemar Zachar es Yom HaShabbos Lekacho. Kilomar, what does that mean to say Kiddush? What does saying Kiddush mean? The Rambam says it means, Zachreyu Zechiras Shvach V'Kiddush. I have to point out the sanctity of Shabbos. I have to highlight the uniqueness and the praise of Shabbos. That's what Kiddush is for. Kiddush is not simply a Baruch Pi HaGafen. That's one part of it. We say Kiddush when we daven as well. When we elevate and we sanctify and we highlight the uniqueness of Shabbos, we do it both in our davening, we do it once again when we come home. But Kiddush means, says the Rambam, that we have to highlight the uniqueness of what Shabbos means. And then the Rambam says something that is very surprising. Tzarech lizachreyu b'knisaso v'yitziyaso. You have to highlight the significance of Shabbos both at the entrance point of Shabbos and when Shabbos is leaving as well. B'kiddush hayom, you say the Kiddush at the beginning and the Havdalah at the end. So the Rambam seems to say that there's some kind of intrinsic connection between Kiddush and Havdalah. The Rambam says that it's all part of one major mitzvah. And that mitzvah is we have to highlight the significance of Shabbos. How do we do that? We do it by first pointing out at the beginning of Shabbos that today is different. We say Kiddush. We sanctify Shabbos. We do it at the end of Shabbos by being the bookend and saying, now Shabbos is over, but you should understand, Hamavdu ben Kodesh Lechol ben Ar Lechoshev, this is different. The next day of the week is not going to be the same. The Magen Mishnah writes that it would seem from the way the Rambam formulates this, that Kiddush and Havdalah are both a mitzvah midi araisa. Because they're all part of the mitzvah of Zachar Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsha. The Rambam just says there are two manifestations of how you do it. On the way in, you say Kiddush. On the way out, you say Avdallah. But all of them are under the same rubric of this mitzvah of Zachar Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsha. That is, in fact, the way the Magen Avraham understands the Rambam as well, that Kiddush and Avdallah are both considered to be a mitzvah mid'oraisa. And there are a number of Rishonim who take that position. However, the Rush famously writes in a tshuva that he disagrees, and he says in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, one of the earlier Rishonim, that this is not the case, that Havdalah is only midirabanan. Kiddush is something that is learned from Zachar Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Havdalah is something that is only midirabanan. So you'll ask, what is the difference? Who cares if it's d'oraisa or d'rabanan? Either way, we have an obligation to say Kiddush and then to say Havdalah at the end. So what's the difference if Havdalah is only midirabanan or if it's even midirabanan? Why should that make any substantial difference in the conversation? The answer is, as we know, there's a major distinction by many mitzvahs HaTorah between men and women. As we know that men are chayiv, are obligated to observe all of the Taryag mitzvahs. Women are not obligated in all of them. They have an exemption from anything that is a mitzvah haseh shehazman grama. Which, by the way, if you take a poll and you ask, how many mitzvahs are there on that list? I try to say this as often as it comes up, because I think it's important to know. How many mitzvahs are there on the list that women would be exempt from? When the Rambam discusses this, he says there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. You'll say to yourself, oh, how many mitzvahs are really time-bound? Probably many. So what would you say, how many mitzvahs do women not have an obligation to observe? 100. No? When you break it all down, with all the exceptions and all the everything else, it's about 6 or 7 mitzvahs that women don't have an obligation to fulfill. So for the most part, men and women are equal with regard to this halacha. They have to observe all of the mitzvahs of Torah, basically, and they all certainly have to observe all of the Lo Ta'aseh Shabbat Torah. Question then becomes, when you have these 6 or 7 examples, like the Gemara says, when you have the example of tzitzis, shofar, tefillin, lulav, sukkah, sfiras ha'omer, those are the examples where you say that a woman, because it's time-bound and there is no other factor involved in it, a woman won't have to be obligated to do that mitzvah. But when it comes to matzah, what do you mean? Matzah is mitzvah seisha hazman grama. So you have to observe matzah. Why? If I eat matzah on Chanukah, it doesn't help. If I eat matzah on Sukkot, it doesn't help me. So why is a woman obligated to eat matzah? The answer is because there's a separate limud where the Gemara says whoever is obligated in the iser of not eating chametz also has an obligation that they have to actively eat matzah. So we have all kinds of different variations of that theme where women are going to become obligated. For example, matzah. Kiddush is another example where the Gemara says, Kal sheyeshna b'shamar, yeshna b'zachar. The Gemara says that we have a tradition that zachar v'shamar were said at the same time. How can it be zachar and shamar are said at the same time? It's impossible. Nobody's able to say two words at the same time that are different. And the answer the Gemara says is it comes to teach us that there is something that intrinsically connects zachar and shamar. Shamar means you're not allowed to violate any of the mitzvahs lo saseh of Shabbos. You're not allowed to do a malacha. Zachar means you have to do all the positive mitzvahs on Shabbos. So it means anyone who's not allowed to do a malacha on Shabbos is also obligated to fulfill all of the mitzvahs of Shabbos. And that is why women share the obligation of Kiddush the same way that men do. Even though Kiddush is only something that we do on Friday night. If you do it on Tuesday night, it doesn't help. So therefore, the Gemara says that Kiddush would be an exception to the rule. And that would be the difference here. If you say that this is a mitzvah saseh de'oraisa, if you say that this is a real mitzvah that comes from the mitzvah of Zachar Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, then that means the same way that women are obligated in Kiddush, they share the obligation in Havdalah. It's all part of one mitzvah. If you say, however, that this is only a mitzvah midirabanan, that the Rabbanan, the Chachamim instituted that we should say Havdalah at the end of Shabbos, then women would probably be exempt. And because of that, we have a major dispute in Shulchan Aruch. It's a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Which way do you go with this? Do you assume that this is in fact a mitzvah saseh de'oraisa which women share? Or do you say that this is only midrabanan and therefore women are exempt? So that is a machlokas in Shulchan Aruch. And Me'ikar Adin, the Mishnah Berurah writes, Me'ikar Adin, we assume that women are obligated the same as men in Havdalah. So this is a common misnomer. People don't understand it. So we try to be machmir, and we say, if a man is in the house anyway, so he may as well be the one to make Havdalah for the women of the house. Why? Since we're not sure whether a woman is actually obligated to do it, so you may as well have a man. But what if a woman does not have a man available? Does she have to go knock on somebody else's door and be matriach them to come? Does she have to humiliate herself and say, oh, I need someone to help me? No, she doesn't have to. Me'ikra din, she can say havdalah on her own. I've often pointed out that there are many families, it's very nice, it's a sweet idea, but it would probably be better if it wasn't done this way. There are many families who, let's say, have a elderly grandmother who lives somewhere, and she's not able to come out of her house. So she doesn't have somebody who is available to say havdalah for her. So what do? Every week, which is very sweet, right after Shabbos is over, they call the grandmother, and they make havdalah over the phone. The same way they're making havdalah for themselves, they also make havdalah for the grandmother. It's nice, but hearing havdalah over the phone is a big shiloh whether or not you say havdalah. So the better thing would be if the grandmother would say havdalah for herself. Now again, taking out the psychological, beautiful feelings that she'll have from being connected to the family when they make her own havdalah, that's a cheshbon you have to make on your own. But if you're weighing the two options and asking yourself, what should I do? The better thing to do would be for the woman to make havdalah on her own. And this whole idea of women growing mustaches from saying havdalah and drinking the wine is a myth. There's nothing to it. If you want to see something interesting about it, read an article by Rabbi Ari Zivotofsky, who has very fascinating articles all the time. But he did the research where this came from. Like, what is this idea all about? And he says, we've never found a woman who ever had this problem of growing a mustache that only came from drinking havdalah. So you don't have to be concerned. You won't be the first one. And that is with regard to that. Anyway, in Shulchan Aruch it says, one of the very important halachos with regard to havdalah is that you're not allowed to do malacha before you say havdalah. Now, for the most part, that is not really so relevant to most of us, because if we're going to daven in shul and we're going to say atachon antanu in the Shemona Esrei, you have already technically said havdalah. So you're going to go home and say it again alakos. So you ask yourself, why do we say havdalah twice? Why do we say it in Shemona Esrei and then we say it again at home? It's a strange thing to do. We already said. So you'll say, what do you mean? The rest of our family is at home, so we have to make havdalah. Let's say I live alone. So I already said havdalah in my Shemona Esrei. Why do I have to repeat havdalah at home? So the Gemara says it's true, but this really was something that evolved over time. It started off that they told everyone to say havdalah on a cup of wine. Then later, why? Because a cup of wine is considered to be chashuv. The same way we use a cup of wine under a chuppah and by a bris milah and by a pidyon haben. It elevates the whole bracha that we're making. So havdalah was instituted over a cup of wine. Then the Gemara says, a generation of Jews came around and they had no money. So they didn't have enough money to make havdalah over a cup of wine. So Chazal said, under these circumstances, you say havdalah in the Shemona Esrei. Forget the cup of wine. Then a couple of years went by, and the economy went back to normal, and everybody was able to afford wine again. So then they said, okay, so now you're back to the beginning, so then you should once again go back to saying havdalah over a cup of wine. So because of that, the Gemara says, since there may be generations down the line where it will fluctuate in either direction, therefore we now have instituted both. We say havdalah both in the davening, and we say havdalah also over a cup of wine. However, you're not allowed to do malacha before reciting havdalah, which is extremely important for women to remember. Many of the women don't have the opportunity to daven mariv on Matzoi Shabbos. It's too busy in the house. But right away after Shabbos, they want to start doing malacha. So they have to remember to make some sort of havdalah. They have to say Baruch HaMavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol. They have to say something in order to allow themselves to make havdalah, to do malacha. I do remember a couple of months ago when we had one of the Smichas Chaver certificate signings. So there was somebody who came over to my house right after Shabbos. My parents were actually here for Shabbos. So this man came over to my house to pick up his certificate. So I had to sign it. My father had already signed all of them before. Then I had to sign the bottom of it. So I quickly pulled it out. I signed it. And I gave it to him. So my father said to me, my father does this every time he comes for Shabbos, points out something that he found wrong with the way I observe mitzvahs. So it's his way of saying, don't think you're all that. It's great. So anyway, I remember the first time he came here for Shabbos. The first time he came to the White Shul for Shabbos. So they had a 60th anniversary of Rabbi Pelkowitz being in the White Shul, which was an amazing milestone. He was turning 90 years old. And I was the assistant rabbi at the time. Rabbi Pelkowitz was the rabbi emeritus. Rabbi Feiner is the rabbi. So they had invited my father to give a shiur to honor Rabbi Pelkowitz. He had such a long-standing relationship with him. They thought it would be a kavod to him. So I was terrified. I said, do me a favor. You know, really, don't invite my father. It's okay. We could do without him. They said, no, it's very nice. Rabbi Pelkowitz will appreciate it. I said, okay, do me a favor. Don't put me on the program this Shabbos. I'll just watch. I'll listen. It's okay. No, it's nice. Rabbi Pelkowitz will want you to be on. Fine. So they gave me the shiur before Shacharis on Shabbos morning. I was supposed to give a half hour parsha shiur. I'm like, great. No one's going to show up. It's perfect. It's a very good slot for me. So, of course, my father, being the person that he is, says on the schedule, someone's giving a shiur. It didn't matter that it was me. He shows up. You know, he does this every time he goes away for Shabbos to speak somewhere. It says on the schedule, the rabbi is giving a daf yomi. It's 7:30 in the morning. My father shows up. I said to him, Daddy, you're not doing the rabbi a favor. He didn't prepare. He's not expecting you to be there. And you show up and he feels like, you know, whatever. He feels wonderful. So my father comes to the shiur. He's sitting in the front row. He's listening. Anyway, Shabbos afternoon, my father gave a shiur. He gets up and he says, you know, it's very nice to come visit my son's community. It's nice to see he's a rabbi. It's, you know, it's just a big nachas. It's very nice. He says, but you know, I have to say, I went to shiur this morning and everybody's telling me how much they enjoy it and everybody's saying how much they appreciate him. I don't know. I went this morning. He's got a lot to work on. So that was the first time he came for Shabbos. And since then, it's been, I guess, a little uphill. But what he pointed out to me the last time he was here, it's all out of love. It's fine. What he pointed out to me the last time he was here was he saw me signing this thing and he said, oh, you're not allowed to do malacha before Havdalah. I said, what do you mean? I just drove home from shul. So what do you mean I'm not allowed to do malacha before Havdalah? He said, yeah, the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to do a malacha kaveda. You're not allowed to do a serious malacha. So I said, so driving my car is not a serious malacha, but signing a smichas chaver certificate is a serious malacha? How do you understand the difference between a real malacha and not? So it's a good question. I don't know. But he said, signing is for sure not allowed. So anyway, that was a chiddush to me. I never knew that. Interesting. But that was what he thought. And the bottom line being that you're not allowed to do malacha before you say Havdalah. So listen to the following question that is raised by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And it shows the sensitivity and the concern of a gadol b'Yisrael for every Jew. He's not only worried about the religious Jews who live in his community, who are observant, who are keeping Torah mitzvahs. He's worried about everybody. So he said he has a problem. On Matzi Shabbos, you order a taxi. Rav Shlomo Zalman lived in Shari Chesed. And you have to order a taxi to go somewhere. So the problem is you're ordering a taxi right after Shabbos. And you know this person is not going to be somebody who recited Havdalah. So what are you supposed to do? He's not allowed to do malacha. And I'm making him do malacha as a result of my ordering him to come to my house. So how, asked Shlomo Zalman, am I allowed to order a taxi to my house on Matzoi Shabbos when I know that he has not said Havdalah yet and one is not allowed to do malacha before reciting Havdalah? That's the question. And because of that, Rav Shlomo Zalman argued that the proper thing to do when getting into a taxi on Matzoi Shabbos or when going onto the bus right after Shabbos, and obviously they were Mechala Shabbos to get there, but when you are the one who's using their service, the right thing to do is to say Shavua Tov, to say Gut Tovach to the driver. Why? Because that is a way of saying that this person is acknowledging that it's no longer Shabbos. Nobody says Shavua Tov on Shabbos afternoon. You say Shavua Tov on Matzoi Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said he was always careful that when he got into a taxi or he got onto a bus on Matzoi Shabbos, he always greeted the driver first by saying Shavua Tov, thank you so much, and he would wait until the response came back. And he said that counted as the Chilonis Havdalah. Which is a very beautiful thought. It's a beautiful way to consider the situation. It's amazing that Rav Shlomo Zalman even thought about this problem. But this is something that he had suggested. Like in many things in Yiddishkeit, it didn't go down that simply. The Tzitz Eliezer was a contemporary of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He was younger than him, but he was a contemporary. And the Tzitz Eliezer has many, many volumes of Shalos Tshuvos, where he discusses many different issues. Tzitz Eliezer was Rav Waldenberg. He was the posek of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. After he passed away, that's when Rav Asher Weiss took over that position. But for many, many years, he was the posek of Shaarei Tzedek, and he wrote many tshuvos about issues that are relevant to modern medicine and how we're supposed to deal with that in today's society. So the Tzitz Eliezer here, in the 11th volume of his tshuvos, discusses this chiddush of Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he says, I don't think that that really is going to be helpful. Because he says, in the end of the day, what does it mean to make Havdalah? It doesn't mean that you acknowledge that it's no longer Shabbos. Look outside. It's dark. Nobody needs me to acknowledge that it's dark outside. The point of Havdalah is, he says, you look in the way the Rambam formulates the mitzvah of Kiddush and Havdalah, and he says, let's go back. What is the essence of Kiddush? What is the essence of Havdalah? The Rambam says, the point is, we have a mitzvah of Zacharas Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. How does that manifest itself? Number one, Zachreyu Zechira Shvach V'Kiddush. I have to highlight and praise and sanctify and make sure everybody understands the difference between what is holy and special about Shabbos and what is just regular and mundane about any other day of the week. Said the Tzitz Eliezer, when I say Shavua Tov, when I say Gut Tovach to someone, that's not highlighting anything about Shabbos. It's just pointing out that it happens no longer to be Saturday. But it's not saying anything beyond that. And therefore, he said that would not be sufficient to get into a whole conversation with the driver and say, oh, by the way, you know what? I know you don't observe Shabbos, but do you know that Shabbos is very different? And now it happens to be Shabbos is over. Now, again, that's a little extreme. You're going to go and have a whole dialogue with the driver before you get into the car, before you open the door. It's a whole different conversation, but it was just an interesting chiddush, an interesting idea of Reb Shlomo Zalman with regard to that. Yeah? It would, but he's not saying it. So it would suffice if he said Baruch Hamavdim and Kodesh Lechol, but he would have to be the one, meaning Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach said his Havdalah already. So how would it help for him? I'll close. I know I didn't have enough time to get through everything here. Maybe we'll continue next week. I have to deal with the Yud Kevav Kishayla. I like that one. So, I like your question too. They're all good. So I'll just close with a story. Just it really highlights the uniqueness of Reb Shlomo Zalman's perspective. Every week after Reb Asher Weiss's shir in Bayit Vegan, so I was learning in the Mir Yeshiva, which was in Geula, and I used to go to Bayit Vegan every Tuesday night. And on the way home, Rav Asher Weiss was driven home to Ramot, and they would always drive me home on the way. So they would drive me back, drop me off in the mirror, and drop him off in Ramot. And there were a lot of fascinating conversations, because the driver was someone by the name of Rabbi Tzviki Lau, who's the son of Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau. So we always had very, very interesting conversations. I always tell people when they ask me about it, I say, Rabbi Lau used to tell stories about his father, I used to tell stories about my father, and Rav Asher Weiss used to tell stories about himself. So it was a very interesting car ride. So anyway, one week it just so happened that it was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's yard site that night when we were driving. So he decided they were going to tell stories about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the car. So Tzviki Lau told an amazing story that his father had told him. His father learned in Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's yeshiva in Kol Torah in Bayit Vegan. And he told an amazing story. He said that for years and years, there was a push from the Haredim, who were in the government, to close the streets of Yerushalayim on Shabbos. They wanted to close the streets. Why? Because they said, our children shouldn't be witness to Chilul Shabbos. We shouldn't have to see cars driving on Shabbos. They want all the streets closed. There was a big fight, a big discussion about it. Never went anywhere. And finally, one fine day, Teddy Kolach, I think, was the mayor of Yerushalayim. And he calls up Chaver HaKnesset Parush, who was the official who was representing the Haredim in many of the things, but in this particular issue. And he said, I have a map for you. Come to my office, sign off on the map, and we're going to close off these streets of Yerushalayim. So the Chaver HaKnesset goes to meet with him. He looks at the map, and he wasn't happy because he had wanted many more streets closed off. And now the mayor came back to him after all these years of negotiating, and he gave him something that was far less than what he had expected to get from him. So he didn't want to say that. He didn't want to be ungrateful to his face. So he turned around and he said, look, I have to clear it with the Gedolim. I have to go to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I'm not willing to sign anything without getting an okay that I can sign off on it. And he assumed Reb Shlomo Zalman is going to say no, and he's going to blame it on him. He'll go back and say, look, if it was up to me, of course I would accept it. Reb Shlomo Zalman said no, so what am I supposed to do? That was the plan, as often is what's done. So that's what they decided to do. So he takes the map, he goes to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's house, shows it to him. Reb Shlomo Zalman says, how can you sign off on such a map? So he was very excited. Oh, you see, we're going to blame it on him. So Reb Shlomo Zalman said, I don't understand. If you close these streets, you're going to have chilonim who are driving on Shabbos anyway are now going to have to take a detour and drive twice as long because they're not going to be able to go through the normal route that they travel to get to their homes. You're prepared to take on your shoulders other Jews who are going to have to be mechala Shabbos twice as much because you don't want your kids to see somebody driving on Shabbos? That's something you're prepared to do? You can't sign on this. And I thought that was such a beautiful story. It was an amazing story. It showed the godless, the tremendous insight and the foresight and the understanding and the compassion and the sensitivity of Reb Shlomo Zalman, not just to his own community who consulted with him and who asked him questions, but to many others who really had no connection with him at all and who had never sent him any shaila in their lives, and who really were not interested in his guidance, but he kept them in mind, and he felt that was a very important factor that needed to be considered when having a mundane conversation about this, about closing off streets, and which streets were allowed to close, and which streets perhaps not. So I think just it's an opportunity for us to appreciate how a Gadol B'Yisrael thinks. They think way outside of just the regular parameters that we see in front of us. They don't just look at the set of circumstances that are presented. They have to look far beyond it and make a decision that is based on not just the people who are standing there, but something that is based on a far better understanding of the community as a whole, of the fallout, of the price that's going to be paid as a result of either way of the conversation going. I think it's a very important opportunity to appreciate that and to understand it. But again, that just comes out of this shiloh, a lot more to say. But for now, I guess we'll keep it at this. We're going to dive in.